meeting is now being recorded.
Hello and welcome to the second meeting of the jurisdiction subgroup of CCWG on accountability. First, I want to see if there are any updates to statements of interest. Hearing none, I'll move on. For purposes of roll call, is there anybody on this call who is audio only?
Sorry, Tatiana Tropina speaking for the record. Yes, I'm on the audio only for the moment, but I might join Adobe Connect later. Thanks.
Thank you, Tatiana. So let's kind of begin. Still not quite at my computer, so Bernie, I don't know if you could put up the, if you saw the agenda that was sent around, and if you could put that up in Adobe. Sorry, I didn't.
That is currently up.
Excellent. Okay. Next thing to cover is
first item is time recommendation.
Right. And I think based on where we were last week, or you know, 2 weeks ago in the discussion there, is that we're going to try a fairly even rotation between this time, 1,300 hours, and then I think it's the 1,900-hour slot. And the 0500-hour slot or whatever it is, we will not be using. That may not be a every other week thing exactly, because there are a limited number of slots for all of the subgroups, and some of them have also chosen rotations. So we'll map out in the next few weeks as quickly as we can and put them into the overall scheduler so that we, you know, are as close as possible to the rotation that we indicated there, that we at least average out. And, you know, we'll be avoiding the 1900 slot on Friday, since that gets into Friday evening and Friday night for a lot of people, and that's not a really good work time for anybody. Bernie, I don't know if we scheduled anything past this week. I think I did see one scheduler go out for next week, if I'm not mistaken.
Greg, that is correct.
Yeah.
We have a call September 14th, 1900 out.
Thanks. I see that there. Okay, that's Wednesday, September 14th at 1900. That'll be the next call, and we'll aim for a 1300 call the following week, and so on and so forth. And, you know, over time, our aim will average out to be very good. As Donald Trump would say, we'll have the best aim. And so I think that covers meeting times. Does anybody have any comments or questions about meeting times? I can't see the Adobe I'm going in right now, but if anybody has their hand up.
We have a question from Caboose, Greg.
Okay. If you could, if it's in the chat and you could read it out, that would be great.
No, his hand is up.
Okay, Caboose, go ahead, please.
Yes. Do you hear me, please?
Yes.
Yeah. There are many 1,900 hours. If the meeting is only for 1 hour, is it not possible to shift it to 2,000 hours instead of 1,900 hours?
At this
very
point,
bad time here. It's a possibility, just to explore the 2000 hours UTC instead of 1900 hours UTC. Sooner, in less than a month, we adjust our clock in Europe, and then we would be difficulty with that if we want to retain that. Just asking a possibility. Thank you.
This is Greg Chatton, for the record. Right now, the subgroups of the CCWG and the CCWG itself, as I understand it, and I think the implementation oversight team left over from WorkStream 1, all have three bands of time to choose from, which are the 500, 1300, and 1900 hour times. Those have been assigned to this working group. So that may change at the time that daylight savings time changes, but right now the 2000 hour time is not a time that's available to any of the subgroups. We certainly can explore changing that over time. But that would again have to be a change for everybody, and I believe that there may be meetings, other meetings that are also, ICANN meetings, of course, that have been given the 2000 hour time at the moment. So those would have to change if those are meetings where they have overlaps with our meeting. So it's a juggling act that needs to take place. So, for instance, 2000 hours is used regularly by the new GTLD subsequent procedures working group, I see looking at my calendar, and the CCWG IANA uses that time as well, and I see 2100 hours being used by the RPM members, again, I see new GTLD subsequent procedures regularly uses that time. I do see accountability use that time at 9th of August. Not quite sure why.
Correct.
We can, yes, Bernie.
Thank you. I think Greg is making the point that for the moment, we are stuck with this. We have noted that when daylight savings time changes, we will be reviewing those times, and as such, those times will probably change at that point. We haven't finalized looking at a schedule. Any new schedule will go to the full CCWG plenary for approval. So I will note your request as part of this, but for the moment, I would say for the next few meetings, we will be on this schedule. Thank you.
Thank you, Bernie. Anything else on timing? I think we work with what we have to work with at the moment, and staff will deal with this on an overall basis with our input. With that, I'd like to move on to the work plan and schedule overview, which is the second page of the agenda document. So, Bernie, if you could scroll down to that, that would be helpful, of course.
Yeah.
I'm okay.
Let me know when you've got that up, Bernie. I'm now in Adobe, so I'm looking at the screen.
That sheet is now up, Greg.
Okay, maybe I've got some latency issues.
It might be that everyone has scroll control also, so if you just scroll down yourself to the second page.
There we go. Adobe on the tablet is always a little bit of a different experience. Okay, so we should all be looking at the overview of work plan and schedule. This is not a work plan, really. It's just a calendar, but it shows you know, some indicators of what our work plan needs to be. And work plan needs to be something that we collaborate on doing, not a top-down process. So we'll need to collaborate on coming together with one. You know, that said, in the right-hand column, I have suggested some of the things we should approach over the next couple of months in order to, you know, kind of stay on target. This is all assuming that we are a complex and not a simple question. There's a faster track for simple questions, but I don't see any evidence that we should belong in that track. If anybody thinks otherwise, happy to hear it. Would love to hear it, actually, but just not the case. So the targets are really in the, if you look at the second, if you look across, you can see the external targets are that sometime in October, we will be discussing with the Plenary Cross Community Working Group what our progress is to date and whether and how we update the community in Hyderabad on the progress of this particular subgroup. And then sometime in, by the, also before that, really by the end of this month into early October, we should have developed our work plan and developed our schedule. It doesn't mean they'll be graven in stone. I think we'll need to revisit them, especially as we firm up our scope and our idea of a deliverable and our process. But that, you know, the first, in a sense, the first goal is by the end of this month, more or less, to have developed our work plan and our schedule in a decent draft. And then, you know, in Hyderabad, we'll have face-to-face, and we may be updating the community, probably should be updating the community, even if it's a fairly early stage update. In December, we'll be again going back to the plenary CCWG. At that point, having a discussion really of where we are to date and seeking midstream guidance from the CCWG as well. So that's why it's called the first substantive discussion of our work. You know, at that point, we already need to be into our deliverable. And January needs to be spent really focusing on the deliverable. And February, we should have the deliverable completed. And then a public comment period will be you know, taking place. So that's kind of the process overview in terms of the substance. You know, we need to begin now, as Milton notes. We can't just spend the time talking about work plans and schedules. Indeed, work plans don't make sense until we have a sense of our scope and what the question is that we're answering and what answers we're exploring and what information we might need and the like. So that does begin now, and not only after we've developed a work plan and a schedule and the like. So that's why after, if you look at the right-hand column, second row, it's my suggestion, and we can, you know, talk about this, that we begin with a close reading of the staff paper, which, as we revised it, that is the Google Doc, which was circulated yesterday. And, Caboose, I see your hand is up. Caboose, I'm not hearing you yet, so.
Hello?
I hear you now.
Yes, I have a little doubt about in November that we put poor meeting because the people are leaving their own places depending on their responsibility 30th of October and will be back of 10th of November. In that period, you might have one face-to-face meeting. So far, so good. But after that, from 10th or 11th of November to the end of November, having three meetings in addition to what we had in face-to-face four, and also in December and January because of the holidays, I suggest that instead of four in November, you also put three to four, and also in January, three to four, depending on the situation. Put it in a more flexible way at this stage, and we'll decide at the later stage how the situation goes. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. I think that's a good point, you know, that aside from face-to-face, we'll be lucky to have three meetings in November and December, as I put three to four there, which really means two things. One, we need to make the best use of our meeting time. And second, really, is that a lot more work needs to take place on the list and not counting on the meetings to be kind of the vast majority of our work. So we'll need to work on that. Things went rather quiet, not on – reasonable for the last week of August. There weren't many more comments on the Google Doc, and I'm not sure how many people looked at it. Only about a half a dozen people commented on it, even though the comments go in at least kind of two different major directions. So if you haven't already looked at the Google Doc, you should really be doing so and not just leaving it to a few people, which is why I think that a close reading of the Google Doc, trying to get out of it a discussion of what the scope is of this group and moving from that into a discussion of our goals and then essentially filling in the middle, which is the process of getting on the goals. We'll see if there are any comments on that as a general plan. That's obviously fairly high level, but I think that gets us into the substance fairly quickly, even as we're trying to develop an overall work plan and schedule. Bernie, is that a hand from you?
Old hand, sorry.
No problem. David McCauley seems to have put up a hand in the meantime. David?
Thanks, Greg. David McCauley here for the record. Just offering a suggestion, one way we might be able to get into substance is to sort of ask people to contribute to a so-called gap analysis. Paragraph 30 of Annex 12 from Workstream 1 basically said, let me see, consideration of jurisdiction in Workstream 2 will focus on the settlement of dispute jurisdiction. And then it says, first bullet, confirming and assessing the gap analysis, clarifying all concerns. And I think the gap is between the accountability mechanisms that we're putting in place and any gap there might be in making those work based on jurisdiction. So just a suggestion, maybe a way to get us into this is to try and throw on the table a gap analysis that identifies potential problems based on jurisdiction. Thank you.
Thank you, David. I think that's very helpful, and I think that, is one of the things as we go through the document, which, a large part of that is Annex 12, that's one of the things, we need to call out. So I think if we could essentially start keeping a list of action items for the group, the first thing we can put on that list is the gap analysis. I think if we, to follow on that, I would suggest that we can look at the Google Doc. If you want, you can go to Google, or if you, we can, let's put up a version of it in the screen. This was circulated last night, so it's, I don't know if anybody's been in the document in the last few hours, it wouldn't reflect those changes, but overall, not expecting there were main, big changes. Vinay, my co-rapporteur, your hand is up.
Hi, everyone. So I'm just going to wear my participant hat for a moment and just say that as someone who wasn't as closely involved with Workstream 1, it would be useful to understand if there was a, you know, either from staff or from anyone else who participated more closely. It would be helpful to know if there was a gap analysis of some kind that was done on this issue as part of Workstream 1.
Thanks, Vinay. So that's a good question. And I'll give the answer that I have. That even though it says confirm and assess gap analysis, there was really no formal gap analysis. In the sense, there was a gap analysis by implication that it was decided that we could accomplish what we set out to do, or at least that what we did accomplish in Workstream 1 was sufficient and worked under and works under the current jurisdiction. But that's that doesn't mean that there is a document entitled gap analysis or a series of discussions that could be extracted from the record and called a gap analysis. So I think confirming a gap analysis, you know, really means, I think, kind of coming up with the gap analysis, frankly. It's also around a number of different things. So what we need to do is to define more particularly what we're analyzing, you know, what issues we're looking at. You know, jurisdiction can mean a lot of different things and be focused in a lot of different ways, but we don't have the time, I think, to cover every way in this group. But that's kind of the gap analysis. I see what Farzana has said in the analysis, in the chat, rather, and I see David McCauley's hand is up. David?
Thank you, Greg. It's David McCauley again for the record. I just want to confirm, to use that word, what you just said and to answer Vinay's question. As a participant in Workstream 1, I believe that the discussions regarding jurisdiction were fairly high level, and I don't recall doing a gap analysis of any substance or form resulting in any kind of a document or a study or anything like that. I would say that when I read the bullet confirming and assessing the gap analysis from Annex 12, the word confirming there, as I read it, leads to the possibility of confirming that no gap exists, too. I think it's an open-ended question to us. I would say, Greg, with respect to the aspect of jurisdiction that this is addressing, I think that bullet in particular is with respect to, as it says, settlement of dispute jurisdiction. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Caboose?
Yes, I don't recall that during the Workstream 1 such conclusion was reached that there is no gap. And I don't think that even we should rely on the ICANN board saying that there is no gap. That is their views, who respect it. So we have to check carefully, and we should not jump to any conclusion that there is no gap at all. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. So anybody else on this topic? So I think we have essentially to conduct a gap analysis, and by assessing the previous kind of gap analysis by implication, we can agree with it or disagree with it, or come to conclusions that are more specific about gaps than kind of general conclusion that we accomplished what we set out to accomplish and that it works. So I think that we have a gap analysis. And we need to come out, I think, as Milton says in the chat, we must at least have a pro forma statement that there is or isn't a gap. And I think even, you know, we need to move beyond the pro forma on that. Not that I want to spend 6 months doing a gap analysis. But in a sense, if we identify no gaps, then we can all go home by January. So it may take a while for us to come up with that. I don't know if we can come up with a better name for a gap analysis. I'll accept all suggestions. I can come up with worse names for it. Why don't we move on? You know, now that we've kind of touched on what's in the work paper. Let's put it up in the Adobe Connect and work our way through it. And I think it will give an indication of what our scope might be. Apologies for the size of the text and also for the way this is cut up, but in order to be able to see the comments, has to be done this way. So, you know, the comments here, as you can see, you know, related to whether the paragraphs that follow here, which originally appeared at the end of Annex 12, are in fact the scope or main issues that need to be investigated or focus of what we're doing, and or not. So if there are any questions on this, should be able to tell kind of by who's saying what to whom, kind of who's saying what, and the colors at least are consistent, even though the names disappeared in this version. The names do appear on the Word version, but for some reason the PDFing removes the names. So any comments on this kind of overall question? Seeing no hands, we'll move on to the next page. I'm assuming we all have scroll control. So if you look at the top of page 2 of this document, this is the second to last paragraph of Annex 12, comment on jurisdiction. To my mind, the second to last and last paragraphs are kind of the conclusion. And by what they say, you know, with words like main issues that need to be investigated, at least point to what was thought to be the scope or the focus of this group. So whether it appears here or at the end of the work that we're at the end of the document, I think it does serve that purpose. Let's see if anybody has any comments on that concept of looking at this in that way. Seeing none, we can start extracting things from the document. And this says, the main issues that need to be investigated within Work Team 2 relate to the influence that ICANN's existing jurisdiction may have on the actual operation of policies and accountability mechanisms. So whether or not, putting aside what may not be in scope for us, that is clearly our scope or part of our scope. So if we can, you know, make a note of that kind of second half of the sentence there. that we're going to be investigating the influence that ICANN's existing jurisdiction may have on the actual operation of policies and accountability mechanisms. And then moving on to the next sentence, and this is what David McCauley referred to. This refers primarily to the process of the settlement of disputes within ICANN involving the choice of jurisdiction. And I'm not sure that the of the applicable laws was in there initially, but let's assume that it was. And then says, but not, so that I think again is a positive statement of what our, at a minimum, our scope is, looking at the process of dispute settlement within ICANN, both choice of jurisdiction and applicable laws, and dispute settlement may mean several different things. We have IRP, we have request for reconsideration, we have dispute resolution paragraphs in contracts of the contracted parties, and other things. So I think we need to define what is meant by dispute resolution. And those are just a few suggestions as to what may be included in dispute resolution. Any comments on this point? Caboose.
Do you hear me? I heard perhaps mistakenly that you are not in favor of detention of and the applicable law. If that is the case, please kindly advise why you are not in favor of that. If I have misunderstood that, I'm sorry.
Thanks, Caboose. I was not sure, not having Annex 12, whether or not the applicable law reference appeared there. It's been confirmed to me in the chat that it does appear there, so that's clearly in scope. Whether or not I'm in, that's not an arguable point, as to whether we're going to look at applicable law in the context of, settlement, of dispute jurisdiction. David?
Thanks, Greg. David McCauley here. I had an unfortunate audio lapse when you were speaking about dispute, and so I guess I would ask you to restate it, or maybe I could state what my understanding of dispute resolution. The phrase settlement of disputes within ICANN could either be settlement within ICANN, referring only to ICANN's dispute mechanisms, or it could be disputes within ICANN, which would involve litigation in courts. I think it's probably the latter since it refers to applicable law. So that's my understanding, but I did miss part of what you said, so I'm open to hearing anything else. Thank you.
Thanks, David. Now, to restate and I think to expand, I think we need to kind of come up with a list of what we think that may refer to, and I think it can refer both to dispute resolution within ICANN, such as the IRP and related things, even the RF, the request for reconsideration, and the engagement process. It also may refer to the empowered community and the ways in which the empowered community acts, which ultimately go into the IRP in many cases, but not necessarily. There are other ways. There's also dispute resolution mechanisms in contracts with the contracted parties, and maybe in other contracts as well. So I think, certainly with regard to dispute jurisdiction or settlement of dispute and how it relates to jurisdiction, we should, understand that. As well, and so we have, some linguistic an investigation, and we don't want to get, you know, totally hung up on the words of Annex 12, but I think we do have to honor them. Even, and if we move past them, it's with care. And as pointed out in the chat, you know, looking at the analysis, it's the settlement of disputes within ICANN. So, assumably, that does not involve disputes between ICANN and third parties that have nothing to do with ICANN. Whether that means kind of within the ICANN structures and not in court, that seems to me to probably be a unduly restrictive reading. Certainly one that I think we can debate, especially when we're talking about choice of jurisdiction and applicable laws. There's at least the potential of you know, seeing the inside of a real courtroom, or at least a court-type process, as well as ICANN internal dispute resolution processes. And that's the way I would read it. You know, that's indicated as our primary topic. Then we move on to the next part of that sentence, which says, but not necessarily the location where ICANN is incorporated. So this doesn't necessarily refer to the location where ICANN is incorporated. So to my mind, that's probably the first place where this, our focus or scope is a little bit difficult, a little bit more difficult to ascertain. Not that there isn't more to figure out about what we've talked about already. But I think this is a little bit more, potentially opens up, the scope, significantly or not. And again, question two is, given the structure of the sentence, is this referring to the location where ICANN is incorporated only as it relates to the settlement of disputes, or does it refer to something even broader? Caboose.
My question is that why the text said and not necessarily? That means in general term exclude anything in this paragraph relating to the location of ICANN. Or it was the contrary, including the location of ICANN where appropriate or so on. Why it said so strictly, not necessarily? That means putting a little maneuvering place to be related to the location. But my understanding of discussions, we had several hours of discussion, and this not necessarily was selected, which we did not really had any in-depth discussion. So why it cannot be also related to the location of ICANN, where appropriate or where applicable? Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. If there's anybody else on the call who was in Workstream 1, and many of us were, some of us weren't, if any of us have any recollection of how the wording not necessarily was arrived at and what historically might be intended by that, you know, that would be helpful. David McCauley.
Thank you, Greg. David McCauley again. As a participant in Workstream 1, my recollection is, and this is obviously subject to what's in the transcripts, but I believe that this text that Caboose is asking about is meant, if I can paraphrase, our job is to find out the gap analysis. Is there a problem? Is the accountability mechanism in a material respect broken because of a jurisdictional aspect of where a jurisdictional aspect affecting ICANN? If it is broken, then you consider alternatives. That's the second bullet. Identify potential alternatives and benchmark them. If it's not, our work may be done. I think that's how the word necessarily fits in there. You know, we may get on to the next step, or we may not, depending on the gap analysis. Thank you.
Thank you, David. I think that's helpful and useful. I think, you know, building on that, it may mean that we don't have to get to the jurisdiction of incorporation, and that it should not be inserted kind of artificially into the discussion, but, you know, viewed as a potentially an option. If the gap analysis shows that jurisdiction of incorporation is a material problem in accountability or policy mechanisms, and in dispute resolution, we can't ignore it, but if the answer in terms of an analysis and assessment is that a resolution can be arrived at without, you know, dealing with the location of incorporation, that you know, should be sufficient and appropriate. So I think this language itself reflects a balancing act, and in ourselves we'll need to have some balance. And I think that in terms of, I see a question in the chat from Aubrey. Is there an element of location of incorporation in the plural sense of having multiple incorporations? And that may have both positive and negative aspects. I'll answer that as a non-expert, but as a lawyer who's had to deal with jurisdiction questions over the years. And with corporate matters, that a corporation can only have a single location of incorporation. It can be registered to do business as a foreign corporation in other states in the same country where it's a federal system like the U.S., and can have a presence in other jurisdictions based on the rules of those jurisdictions. But the kind of the domicile of the corporation, as in its location of incorporation, is singular. One of the things that you know, we'll look at too is that there are ways other than location of incorporation that ICANN is at least subject to multiple applicable laws, including the fact of having physical permanent locations in other jurisdictions and the like. That's kind of an attempt at an answer, you know, to Aubrey's question. I think that, and I see that Caboose says in the chat, David, the clarification you provided perhaps could be added to the text. That's an excellent point, and not just regarding what David said. The reason to have a Google Doc, to have a collaborative document, is so that we can work in it. It's our sandbox. So any comment, any suggestion you have, any clarification, allusion, please go into the Google Doc and add it. And I would ask that other than exceptional circumstances, everyone should add their own comments and not depend on the rapporteurs or on staff to add it for them. You know, the rapporteurs clearly will performing a lot of tasks in terms of interpreting, analyzing, consolidating, probing comments as well. But if we can avoid being secretaries, not that there's anything wrong with secretaries, but if we can avoid being scribes for other people's comments into the Google Doc, that would be great. Plus, the system in the Google Doc identifies people who put in things. And I think, you know, as David and Paul indicate, Google Docs become a little hard to follow as comments pile up. The resolution for that, and Google Docs actually keeps a history, so you can go back to earlier states of it, or we can actually, you know, copy the document and move to a kind of a whole second document. So what we do need to do so the comments don't pile up is to try to resolve the comments, or at least the non-controversial comments. So one of the things that the rapporteurs will do is either resolve comments or put them into the text in a way that's other than comments, because as you can tell just from looking at the fact that I have to chop this document into multiple pages, the comments become unwieldy when they pile up. So we'll find ways to resolve the comments that seem to be resolved and to preserve open discussions that kind of outgrow the comment column. And that, we need to use the list. The emails, are critical for discussion and then detailed back and forth and threaded discussions is as critical as the Google Doc. So each one should, try to reflect the other. So we'll do our best. We should all do our best to both follow the Google Doc, which means that if you're not in the Google Doc at least a couple of times a week, you're not fully participating in the work of this group, and that you need to monitor the email list and to respond where we can. The ideas of the subgroups, even though this is one of the larger ones, are to be collaborative groups where everyone works and participates. I encourage everyone to do both those things. Paul McGrady.
Hi, Paul McGrady for the record. I just wanted to respond to Aubrey's question or comment in the chat regarding the lesser registrations. So there's the jurisdiction information, which is in California. ICANN has offices, physical offices, in several other places. I'm not sure what the law there is, but if it's anything like the law of California, having those offices in place would subject ICANN to general jurisdiction in those places, meaning that it could be sued. In the
jurisdiction.
So there's a bit of
feedback. Please go on mute. If...
meaning that ICANN could be sued in those jurisdictions for pretty much whatever. It wouldn't have to be for a specific act. It's hard to speak with the echo. So, in other words, ICANN may be subject to jurisdiction of the courts in other places based upon its activities and office location. But its formation jurisdiction would only be in one single place. I hope that's helpful. I guess, my opinion, rather. I'm not stating it as a fact, but I think that that's a – I think the other lawyers on the phone would probably agree with those thoughts. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. I appreciate that. I do. That is consistent with my understanding, and obviously we can especially look to some of the non-U.S. lawyers or those with knowledge of non-U.S. practice to discuss that. But, given that there are discussions in, for example, in Switzerland or France about, being able to get immunity from jurisdiction while, being located in a place in some fashion, I assume that the default state is that you're subject, as you say, to general jurisdiction in that country, meaning you can sue and be sued in that jurisdiction and a bunch of other stuff as well. Caboose, and then Aubrey.
I'm just referring again to the previous situations. I suggest support those people who want to have on the list and Google document, but not only one of them. And now, to the last point of discussing raised by Avery, is it appropriate time to go to this type of discussion now? Or just we take it and put it aside and then come back to that? We are not just dealing with this particular issue. It's too much detail at this stage. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. I think it's appropriate to raise it at this point, and certainly it's something we're going to be coming back to in much more depth at this time. I think that, given the fact that we have people from a lot of different jurisdictions and a lot of different professions, we're going to have to, refine our understanding of jurisdiction conceptually and the many different things that people refer to as jurisdiction as we go along. And that's indeed later in this document as well. Aubrey?
Yeah, thank you. With respectful apologies to Caboose and the rest of you, I really was asking a question that may be based on an inaccurate understanding on my part. And I very much appreciate the issues of jurisdiction based on where you do business, but I think that's different than the incorporation's question. What I had understood, and quite possibly incorrectly, is that the corporation, while home-based, domiciled, incorporated, fundamentally rooted in California, is a known fact and solid, that we had also, and you used the word registrations, and I really don't understand the full level of those, registered, for example, and this is heard, and I don't have proof, I've not seen documents, of registration as an NGO in perhaps was it Switzerland or somewhere, that in creating some of these hubs or offices, we've gone beyond just having an office, but we have signed some kind of agreement, a registration, perhaps not an incorporation in that sense. But signed some sort of document with the local authorities to be there, to have some sort of presence in that country beyond just our office. Now, perhaps I'm wrong. I have no additional company registrations, NGO registrations, what have you, that all are different than the pillar incorporation. And I'm not trying to get into the details of this at this point and what implications it might have. I was just wondering whether there is something beyond the one major incorporation that we have to deal with in that general category. And so it was a question. Thank you.
Thank you, Aubrey. Just briefly, I think this is a question we should ask ICANN Legal. Which is to get more details on the, what I'll call the presence of ICANN in non-U.S. jurisdictions and what the details of those are, to the extent that they have some, knowledge, and I expect they do, of what their presence in those other jurisdictions consists of and what its consequences may be. So if we could note that as a question for ICANN, that would be helpful. I see Sam Eisner answers, we have to adhere to laws that allow us to have offices in different locations, but I can affirmatively confirm that we have not incorporated in any other location. It's 9:57 now, and a number of us have a call at 10, including myself. So what I would suggest is that we'll begin extracting from the staff paper. Let's call it the Google Doc because it's gone beyond the staff paper. We'll start extracting from that document scope or focus items and bullet point them in a second document. So far, they're about three different points, and we're really taking them pretty directly out of that. So I think that that's something I'll volunteer to start as a Google Doc and then circulate a link to that. So in the last couple of minutes, as you know, we have our next meeting Wednesday, 1900 hours. And I think that if we could also look at the document that was circulated in terms of the overview work plan and schedule, comments on that would be most appreciated as well. And we'll try to keep moving using the Google Doc, and now there'll be a second Google Doc as well, focusing on scope in particular. And let's keep the discussion as active as possible in the Google Doc and the list between now and next week. Let's just, at this point, unless anybody has any final thoughts, I think it would be a good time to adjourn. I would like everyone to note the conversation in the chat, and do look at the chat afterwards if you haven't been reading it as we go along. I think there's some important points, and they are being captured in the notes as well. So I want to thank you all for participating, and I will call this meeting adjourned and look forward to our next call and to activity in the meantime. Thank you and goodbye.